You are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're good. I hope you're happy. I hope you're smiling. And I hope you have been enjoying the summer so far. It's not often we get an opportunity to talk to each other. I say talk to each other. I'm actually in a room on my own at this moment in time. But to differentiate that in my head from what the Sideshow usually is as versus this episode, the Sideshow is usually me holding a microphone, speaking to somebody far more popular and better looking than me. And then you listen to it, and I suppose, let you know about the amazing, brilliant, fantastic things that they are doing. And on this occasion, I guess it's not one of them. Let me play this intro jingle, and I'll come back to you just after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
So it's been a long, how do I describe it, since maybe about November last year. I think I missed out on a Garden Media Guild Awards event. I would have spoken with and alongside Andrew Fisher-Tomlin, funnily enough, at the Landscape Show. I'll come back to that in a second because I'm due up there again. But that, I think, was around about September in Battersea Park. And I was talking with Andrew about the Jardin de la Paix, gardens of peace that were built around the Somme region of northern France. Mine, or the garden that I had realised, designed, and was there to complete, was about 10 weeks there for me. Andrew's was entirely different, but equally wonderful. And so he represented Wales, the Bassons, for example. James and Helen would have represented England, and they also built a garden at Teepval. And it was really wonderful for Jeremy and Andrew to pick up the phone and say, would you like to stand on a platform? It wasn't a platform. I was actually feet on the ground, but speak about that thing that you do. And it's nice when people think that the thing that you've done or made or created has a relevance or important. And again, I guess that's a sort of a flip reversal for me. This year, at the Landscape Show, Google it, pull out your phone, this thing will keep playing, and just search the Landscape Show, and the dates will come up, and it's in Battersea Park, and it's really worthwhile going to, because they tend to do the superstars don't feature, shall I phrase it, as much, or you don't go to see the names. Maybe the Gardeners Were Alive thing at the NEC in Birmingham. That's a long list of important people who stand on stage. And I know, you know, Mick Jagger or Ron Wood is going to stand on stage, and I'm going to go and hear them. They could tell me they were making pizzas or coconut creams the day beforehand. I would find that fascinating, because that is that. On this occasion, however, it's a little bit the opposite. All I can tell you is I know I'm on a panel, or I'm hosting a panel. I'm the bus conductor, is that what you call it? And Ellen Mary, who, in brackets, I sometimes call Mary Ellen, is on that. And Primrose Hall Peonies, Alec White, he's involved in that as well. And Google it, book it, send me a note, or drop me a line, and I'll let you know what dates I'm going on. And I'm going to try and get Jeremy Story Walker, who's the brains behind the Landscape Show, to come on. I'm going to try. He may be too popular for me. And see if we can get him to talk about this. My head being all over the shop, I had been sent this little piece of audio, and it came from very good friends of the show, Agents of Field. Let me just play this little clip for you now.
Ah, as you can see, the wall is empty. It is July. It is time for someone new. But who would it be? Would it be a garden blogger? A garden designer? A garden-er? Or would it be a garden podcaster? I have to say, I am particularly excited about this month's Who's on the Wall, because this person is in my eyes, someone quite special. In fact, he is an absolute superb gentleman. He is a very talented gentleman. He is a man with a heart of gold. He's a very, did I say talented? Oh, he's getting too many compliments. What can I say? He is warm. He is engaging. He knows his shizzle about gardening. And he is a fantastic podcaster. In fact, when I first started the whole garden blogging, I stumbled upon him by accident. I didn't know much about, you know, the blogging, about the podcasting. So once on the internet and you start looking, he was the first person that came up. And I listened to a couple of his podcasts and I was hooked and have been hooked ever since. The guests he gets, whether they're garden designers, whether they're a celebrity, whether they're someone working in a nursery or in the background of gardening, he manages to find these people, engages with them and gets out the most interesting stories, the most interesting facts. He is a people person and he knows how to get the best from people. He's a genuine person. When you meet him, you can't help but smile. You can't help but open yourself up to him because he wants to know you. He wants to know all about you. He asks these questions because he's interested. He is smoother than the Blarney Stone. He is smoother than a cold Guinness on a hot summer's day. I think you probably know who he is. He is the Irish gem, an Irish legend. He embodies everything positive about gardening. So this month, ladies and gentlemen, who's on the wall is Mr. Peter Donegan.
Peter Donegan, Peter Donegan.
The Salt Show.
Oh, Peter, if you were the Blarney Stone, I'd give you a kiss.
You may, and you may be right, in thinking that Peter, of the third person now, only played that clip because he couldn't pay anybody enough money to say nice things about him, still in the third person. However, that is far from the case because my head was put on the proverbial wall. This time last year, it's my anniversary of being on the wall, a wall that no longer exists because they moved home. How and ever. Aid and Sophie are Garden Media Guild award winners, and being that I'm due back to France again this year, I think it's twice, I'm unsure when I'm going to see or bump into people maybe next, because last year was all over the place and this year I don't really think it's going to be much different to an extent. Myself and Aid and Sophie, funnily enough, bumped into each other at RHS Cardiff, where myself and Ed Burnham had built, or I designed, and Ed was the contractor, to be somewhat biblical about things. And myself and Sophie just had a bit of a moment speaking on the garden about life and things that I tend not to mention a whole lot. I apologise if I'm being a little bit hemming and hawing or coming and going in my speech at this moment in time. But they are on a wonderful journey, which is also the reason why I wanted to play it up, because it also broke up me yabbering on, which is what I'm actually doing at this moment in time. But their journey has been a move to somewhere shire, to quote Dylan Moran, out into the countryside, away from the hustle and bustle. They jacked in the real jobs. But if you're in the process of thinking about piecing together your own garden, grow your own allotment, but a home, but a garden, but not an allotment, if that makes sense to you, all in your own space, then these are the guys to watch. And I say I would urge you, it's probably the first time in a few hundred episodes that I've ever urged anybody to do anything, really. I'm not really an urger kind of a fella, but they've built the raised beds, they've installed the water butts, they've done the coal frames, they've put in the glasshouse. They've literally done the whole lot. And you can see that home, that house that you bought when you were 25 in my case, and it's I walked in, I remember it clearly, I walked in and I threw a rucksack on the floor, and then I went, well, what do I do now? I had no cup, I had no kettle, I had no toaster, there were no pictures on the walls. Everything I used to travel with used to be able to fit into the boot of the car. And so I had a house, but I didn't have the home. And that's exactly what they're in the process of making. That leads me to the next piece of audio. And it was an Irish radio show called The Business. It airs on probably the equivalent of BBC One, but on the small island. And Richard Curran is a wonderful guy. He's a lovely host. And a good friend of mine, Barry Lupton, who I know from my days of living by the sea with my mum and dad. I rang Barry and asked him, would he come on? The researchers had been talking to me and another girl I know who I'd built the show garden with. In fact, we'd all built show gardens together. And this is this little piece of audio for you now. Little, it's a little bit, but take a listen, enjoy. And I'll talk to you just after it, okay? Okay.
But first, we're sitting just outside the walled garden here at Ashtown Castle in the Phoenix Park. I can't say it's a stunning day, but we're very, very lucky because God decided to water the plants just a short time ago. A light shower and everything is looking absolutely wonderful. Fabulous foxgloves, colourful clematis and wonderful water lilies feature in the various gardens. But what goes into bringing a show garden together, and is it worth the hard slog? We're joined by garden designers Peter Donegan, Monica Alvarez and Barry Lupton, also of Horticulture Connected. You're all very welcome to the programme. Peter, first to you, do you have to be a bit mad to take on to do one of these show gardens?
It certainly helps, Richard, there's no question about that. I think I was saying to one of your researchers, there are people who make equations and there are people who make daydreams. And in a nutshell, that probably sums it up. There's very little financial gain to it. It is total insanity. If you do it outside of Dublin, or if you're building in Bloom and you're not from Dublin and you bring an entire team to here, when we did the Royal Horticultural Society one in Cardiff earlier this year, we had a team of about 14 people in total, revolving like a big brother household, living in a room that is no bigger than most people's kitchens. If I tell you, there were people literally in the attic, and that isn't a joke. And you're working 16, 17 hour days around the clock for financial nothingness in a nutshell.
I feel so sorry for you now, Peter, but you've done things. You've dropped cars and boats and everything into show gardens, haven't you?
Yeah, well at the, to back that up, so Monica and myself and Barry, where we all did year one of Bloom 2007, which is a long while ago now, and it's great to see the show has come a little bit further than that. But at the time, I was doing 18th century and 17th century stuff, so anything that I did in Bloom allowed me to go a little bit, how would you say it, let the little people in my head go a little bit free. And that's the beauty about having Bloom in
Dublin.
But
the people who write the checks don't like to hear that, Peter, well, because that means over budget, does it?
Well, this is the point where show gardening doesn't make sense, because you have to go home and say, honey, I'm not David Beckham, I don't have my own brand of aftershave, I don't get 3 months off in the summer, and by the way, every single May, well, bear in mind, you've got a 4 week bill for most of the guys here, it's 4 weeks of a build, they're here for all of the week of Bloom, and then they've got a week of takedown, so that's 6 weeks off the calendar with no money coming in. In year one, a funny statistic, we had a bill of 380 quid, that's 12 years ago, just on coffee.
Well, don't worry, you'll get there with the aftershave at some stage, Peter. Barry, do you take a slightly more practical approach than Peter to show gardens?
Well, I probably do. I think in terms of the madness, I'd probably say it's less madness and more passion. I think that's really what the driver is behind. You know, and you think that the huge amount of stress that's involved with creating a garden, and that massive commitment, and you know, it's almost like there's like an aging process to creating a garden. But you ask people, and you know, despite the stress, despite everything that happens, will you come back next year? Yes, I will come back next year.
People,
why? Because it has an addictive like quality to it. I asked one of the designers there who who'd just come and created her first garden this year. So it was a massive commitment. It's just like Peter's saying, you have 6 weeks and more of your life given over to this, where you don't see friends and family, and you're literally eat and breathe bloom. And yet I asked her, would you be back next year?
And yes. we all think, Monica, that gardeners live without stress. It's a stress-free job.
Yeah, gardening has definitely a therapy attached to it. But I think it's because people that are already connected to gardening, they kind of have it in their heart and soul. It's passionate people. Most people that are involved in gardening come from all sorts of walk of life, and they end up in gardening because of its therapy qualities. So stress is just associated with the time limits that you have. But I agree with Barry that there is a passion, and the message that you want to bring across to people, and the connectivity. You connect people together through bloom.
And you want to see it through. Monica, in terms of cost, what does a show garden cost, roughly?
It depends on the main features of the garden, but you are talking between, say, €10,000 for a small garden to up to €100,000 for a large garden. But again, it all depends on what is involved in the garden. If it's only planting, for example, it's going to be a lot cheaper.
And Peter, what about designing gardens for wealthy clients, big gardens? I mean, what are some of the more expensive ones that you've done?
Private, you could go north to £3 million or €3 million if you wanted on a garden, no question, in the morning.
What's the most pricey one you've done?
I'd say north to €3 million.
You've done what would somebody get for that?
Pardon me?
€3 million. What would somebody get for €3 million?
Well, it gets you a lot, but you don't go into a supermarket and pick something off the shelf for €3 million. That's a lengthy process panned out over a period of time, and you have to appreciate it's all relative. If people are coming to bloom and they're looking at gardens and they're saying, well, that garden is €100,000, there are two options. You can turn around and say, well, how do I get a €100,000 garden for €10,000? Well, that's not logically possible. Well, can I phase it in over a 3-5 year period? And that's what we're starting to see a little bit more of. So €3 million sounds a lot. It's not actually a lot. But when you consider that one of the trees in there, or a lot of the trees in there, were €35,000 apiece.
Per tree?
Per tree.
Where do you get a €35,000 tree?
believe me, that is not expensive. And the difference is, in a conversation I had in Chelsea last week, the question is, if you want to plant a tree now this year and wait until you're 70, well, you saved yourself €35,000. If you want it now and you're 65, then, and you have the $35,000,
maybe it's the ultimate money tree, and money grows on this tree. Barry, have you done any unusual ones or any strange requests or anything?
There's quite a few of them I can't actually talk about, in fairness. Look, one man's strangeness is another person's normal, you know. Any designer who's involved in has been asked to do more unusual things. I remember creating a dog apartment with heating and curtains and beds and a little door with a lock on it, and you know, but there's lots of things like that come up.
This was the dog house, literally. I'm in the dog house.
This is the dog house. In fact, you know, I would have actually quite happily lived in it, in fairness, you know, with the actual quality of the fixtures and fittings.
Would you have a look on your face when the client suggests that to you? Sounds fantastic.
You build up a resistance over years to mask. It's like a designer's poker face to go, oh, a dog apartment. Yes, absolutely. Yes, I've done one of those before. Yes.
Monica, what about inspiration and ideas and concepts? I was looking around, and there are obvious a number of themes this year, particularly of bloom. But one of the things that strikes me, as somebody who is not no green fingers on me at all, there is this sustainable, semi-wild look to gardens. In the past, I think a lot of people spent a lot of money on gardens that looked a lot of shrubbery. It looked very ordered. It was a bit like something maybe on the edge of a golf course. Whereas now it has that look that it almost looks as if it happened itself naturally without all that effort going into it.
Yeah, I think it's going back to the connectivity I was talking about earlier on. People love going to the countryside and maybe close their eyes and let the breeze come and imagine what it would be like to have this sort of feel in their back garden. And how wildlife actually enhances your, you know, it inspires all your senses. So the greenery, you talk about the rain earlier on, the rain is wonderful. It helps you grow. So it's, I think it's all to do with bringing back that connection to nature. And I'm really glad to see that that's coming back to us, that things don't need to be all that manicured, that it is gorgeous to have a few daisies in the lawn. You know, why
something
not?
Simple. And,
yeah.
Peter, where do you get your ideas from?
I'm not joking. If I'll go with what Barry says on a serious note, there are gardens that I do that are quite serious or quite regimental, and there are principles and theories to them. In when you walk into a very grand, almost park-like place or an estate where you'd have a grand house in it, and there are principles that you must sort of follow. You can change the planting to newer varieties, and after that, again, we're back to it. The beauty about show gardening is, or even clients' requests that some might find a little bit strange or indifferent, and believe me, there are a bookload of them that are out there. But it usually comes to you pacing the garden in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, having a cup of coffee, and that sounds very, very, very unusual.
Sounds rock and roll, Peter.
I wish it was. I wish it was rock and roll. But at the same token, you look at some of it and you think it's a little bit mad, it's a little bit unusual. But when you take a stand back, the garden actually fits. And from a show gardening perspective, believe me, for all of the strange things that the people at Bloom have seen maybe over the years, some of them seem relatively sane and other people like them. And we were only talking about this yesterday about, you know, 100,000 people plus come through the gates of Bloom every single year over a 14-year period, and you can have the greatest budget in the world, build the sanest garden in the world, and my mum will turn around and go, no, I don't like it. and that's it. And again, you build
and
the oddest thing in the world, and everybody loves it.
What about you, Barry? When did you first get into gardening? When did you start?
I think a lot of people in design and gardening, it is handed down. Certainly most people can trace things back, and my mother... I would have spent a lot of time with my mother in the garden, and really that's, she instilled that understanding with me.
You were very young. You were interested in what
young,
she was doing
then,
in the garden.
As I was a teenager, I obviously went off and did other things, and then really when I was in my mid-20s, I came back to it and got involved with it and went to college and studied design and things like that. Just going back to what Monica was saying about nature, you were asking the question about nature and planting and where things are looking more naturalistic. I think one of the really great things about what Bloom has done for Irish people and gardening in general, it has allowed a platform for language to be communicated about landscape. And I'll give you an example of we are moving back towards more naturalised landscapes, which is brilliant. I remember about 8 years ago, my local council decided to do reduced mowing regimes, so the grass was being let grow long, and I was walking with my kids and I thought, this is fantastic, look at this. And I came across a sign that had been put up by local residents, which was the sheer disgust that the grass was being let grow and kids might get stung by bees, and God, this is terrible.
It's going to be
and
a disaster.
I think it's, and now when we look at the gardens that are here in Bloom and the gardens that were in Chelsea this year, it's really evident that the language has changed and people have opened up to this idea, as Monica said, that things don't need to be overly manicured and we don't need to be scared of these ideas. And I think that's such a positive thing that's come across.
But Monica,
the show.
Producing a garden like that, it looks, as I was saying, as if it was accidental. It looks as if you don't need to do a lot to create it or to maintain it. I presume it still takes an awful lot of work.
Well, it does. I think the best designers in the world are those that are able to imitate nature, because I think that's probably the most challenging part. Everybody can perform a square or a triangle or something like that and manipulate those shapes, but to actually imitate nature is very honorable. And it is a very delicate job. You have to really know what you're doing. But we have seen really good experts in Bloom over the years, people that are able to make you feel you're actually there in the middle of the prairie, in the middle of, you know, so if it suddenly happened, it didn't. It took a whole year of preparation and 3 weeks of, careful
installation. I think
that's
just a point about that. A great example of that and how hard it is to get nature right. There's a brilliant designer called Gerard Mullen, who was here several years over Bloom and has just done some absolutely fantastic things. But I remember a couple of gardens that he did, and I remember meeting him in a garden that he'd done that it was imitating nature. And I was there going, that looks like sheep's droppings. And he goes, yeah, no, it is sheep's droppings. Four o'clock in the morning, he had been up on the side of a mountain in Waterford collecting sheep's droppings.
Dedicated to create an authentic craft.
Absolutely. Now, yeah.
Peter, what about people who think of gardening? They don't have any experience of gardening. They're a bit intimidated by the idea. I, for example, I don't know my millennials from my perennials. Gardening for me is a sort of a, I would call it AVC, aggressive vegetation control. Mm-hmm. Gardening would be putting too fine a word on it. What about people who are fearful about getting started? Say, I don't know anything about that.
I was only just talking to Helen Dillon before we came up here, and I was saying to her, when I was 6 years of age, I'd gone out to Hote to have an old bookshop sale that used to, I got 50p pocket money a week, and they were selling books for 20p, so I could get two of them at least. And it was a 1927 book by a guy called H.H. Thomas, and it was called An Easy Guide to Gardening, and the first two lines in it were, start by digging the ground 2 foot deep. And so with a week's pocket money, I dug the ground 2 foot deep and I put my radish seeds at the bottom and filled the whole thing in. And of course, they never saw the light of day. So at 7 years of age, I knew how to identify every single weed by its seed leaves, but I'd never seen a radish come up out of the ground. So I had a little bit of education unknown to me, but most experts, inverted commas, know what not to do, because they've got it wrong themselves. And they've been there. So never be afraid to get it wrong. Never be afraid to experiment. Never be afraid to get a little bit different. You look at what UCD have done inside with the toilet that recycles the water and puts it back out into your plants. And it all looks a little bit strange and it catches your eye. But then you look at what was happening in Bloom again. You go back, you're talking to three people who are all here in 2007. And as Barry rightly said, Bloom has given us a platform to be able to go across the water or do things a little bit differently. But we were all newbies, in a sense, to the show gardening world.
Barry, as a career, I know Peter's working towards his own brand of aftershave and all that, but is it a good living? Is it a tough career to have?
I would say you want to love what you do. One of the ways I've always looked at it is that I have a hobby that I occasionally get paid for. and if I can pay my bills from it, fantastic, because it is such a rewarding path to follow. It is not, there's not a huge amount of money. It's unfortunate that the sector is the way it is, and that it is building. People are starting, there's a lot of interior design programs, so people are understanding the value that design can bring, getting that advice, and actually that it's okay to pay for that advice, and you're better to pay for it, and it'll bring a great value over the lifetime of a garden.
Do it if you love it. Peter Donegan, Monica Alvarez and Barry Lupton, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
So there's one other gig that I know that I am booked to speak at. I say speak at. I'll explain or clarify that a little bit better in a moment. But I think you can kind of gather there's a sort of an uncertainty in my voice, because I don't entirely know where I will be before the end of the year is out. You at home may turn around and say, well, we don't know where your head is going to be within the space of 30 minutes. But I don't entirely know the timelines of what France or how long I'm going to be there for. And so there's a knock-on effect of that. But I am booked to MC the RHSI Garden Show at Rusborough House. The RHSI is the Royal Horticultural Society of Ireland. I'm MC there for the day. The guests that you may recognise, Anne Swiddenbank of Gardener's Question Time, and also my good friend, I'm delighted to say, Ed Burnham, and myself as part of that will be in conversation together. Interesting indeed. I'm unsure what's going to happen with myself and Ed, but 28th of July 2019, just Google it, or HSI Garden Show, and it will pop up for you. That's about it. We're sort of heading towards the tail end. I'm not very good at this. I've got Irish genetics, obviously, in me, and mom's cliches in mind of careful on the way up and don't forget where you came from and the wheel always turns. The other side of it is maybe dad's cliche, which was a sort of a don't get above your station either. But I'm not very good at doing the sales pitch. I tend to forget how to ask a woman to dance. In fact, something I have never done in my lifetime. But I am, first time for me to mention this in 430 something episodes, but I am available for garden talks to MC to speak, should you wish to ask. You might be thinking in your head, well, that's a little bit far away. Peter mightn't be interested. It mightn't float his boat. He lives on an island off the coast of the Big Island. He wouldn't possibly come here for cake by way of payment. And all I'd say is, well, drop me a line and let's see what we can figure out between us. If you don't ask, isn't that what they say? And if you want to do that, I'll give you the other contact details, not the Sideshow ones, and that's Donegan Gardens on Twitter. And DonaghanLandscaping.com will get you everything else that you need. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. I hope it was okay, and we'll be back to normal garden podcast things next week. Have a great weekend or great midweek in the great outdoors. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.